And welcome, everybody, to the Troubadour Podcast. Today, I have Anu Shapala. Did I get it?
You did.
Yes. Okay. The first time I've gotten anybody's name who isn't, like, Mark. I get everyone's name wrong, so I appreciate it. And we're going to talk today about a very special conference. It's a conference that's has been life-changing for me in the past and for a lot of people. It's one of the more powerful. I go to a lot of conferences in my life. I started off in sales, so I run sales conferences, but also ideas, philosophy. This is a really special one to me. It's the Objectivist Conference 2019, and it's extra special this year because it's the Romantic Manifesto. And in a minute, I'll tell you that there's a line in the Romantic Manifesto, which is the inspiration for my whole brand, the Troubadour Podcast and the Troubadour Magazine. So, but first I wanted to introduce Anu and your role in this. And we're going to talk, so stick around everybody, because we're going to talk about some of the talks. You know, there's non-art talks, so we're going to, you know, discuss a little bit. We're not going to get into the content, but just like, you know, what's shown and the value of art and things like that. So before we get started with all that, Anu, can you tell us a little bit about what you do with the Ayn Rand Institute and Objectivist Conference?
Absolutely. Thank you, Kirk, and thanks for having me. This is exciting. I am the Director of Cultural Outreach at the Ayn Rand Institute, and among other things, I am in charge of organizing our annual conference, the Objectivist Summer Conference. And actually, the predecessor of this conference was life-changing for me when I came to my first one. I'd read a little bit of Ayn Rand's books and philosophy before that, but I really got hooked when I came to my first summer conference. So it's very meaningful for me now to be organizing these for other people.
That's awesome.
Some other things that I am in charge of at ARI is the international outreach. We are doing more and more with Objectivist and Ayn Rand fans around the world. And we give special support to some people who have started their own organizations. For instance, there is Ayn Rand Center Israel. There is Ayn Rand Center Latin America, which operates out of Argentina, but it really covers most of Latin America. There may be one starting in Brazil. There is one in Korea, one in Japan. And
one day,
a lot of activity around the world.
One day, one of my goals in life is to go to 50 of the greatest museums in the world. One day we can go to the greatest objectivist centers in the world. We can have top 25, you know, go travel around the world and visit all the objectivist conferences. Or objectivist centers and such.
Centers, right. And you can ask the people running them to take you to some of those 50 best museums in the world, too. That's another idea.
The networking is awesome. It's you know, just meeting new people. You know, I'll let you continue, but one of the things I want to talk about was how impactful friendships and you know, the networking are at these places. But continue.
I just want to finish off this international business by mentioning that besides me, we have Annie Winter-Sanz, who is based in France, and she runs all our European programs, which is the most meaningful and the biggest deal that we do internationally. And we've been doing that for about 5-6 years, fairly actively. So that's wonderful. I'm from Finland myself, so I'm an immigrant in this country. I love it here. But it's wonderful to be able to keep in touch with people from the old world and around the world, because Steve and I have a lot of friends around the world.
Yeah.
So,
and some of that may be because of OCON. So with OCON, short for Objectivist Conference, how long have you been organizing it?
I've been in charge of organizing everything. Obviously, I have a lot of people helping me do that.
In charge, correct.
I've been in charge for about 5 years, I think.
Okay, so five.
In some aspects ever since I started at ARI, which is, this will sound like a long time to some of you, since 2003.
Okay, so you've been, I think, in charge of all the ones that I've been to. Well, maybe not, because my first OCON was 2008.
I used to do speaker relations, and, you know, audio visuals and that kind of stuff in the beginning. But now I'm doing everything, you know, meals, customer service, hotel rooms, site selection for the future.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
It's a full-time job right there. It's all like we have all these other international duties, but that sounds like a full-time job.
It's full-time the last 2 months before it's Ocon. It's more than full-time, actually. But that's the nature of it.
And so Ocon is a seven-day excursion into ideas and into the local city history and just all the, because there's fun activities that aren't officially part of Ocon, I know, but they're, you know, like, so one of the tips I have for people, I've gone to three Ocons so far. One of the tips is to, one, go to the Facebook group, just go to Ocon 2019. I'll try to put it in the comments or something below. So go to the Facebook group and just start talking to people. The last time I went was the last time you guys went to Vegas. And Vegas is a fun one, I have to admit. But the other ones are fun, too. I went to one in, I think, Newport Beach. They're all fun. But the last time, like, I got a house, actually. We rented a house. It wasn't Airbnb.
I remember you guys did that.
Yeah. So we rented this house, and we had a whole bunch of roommates. And we had a blast because we that forced us to meet people ahead of time. We had, you know, I had people, some of the roommates were my close friends that I brought with me. And then there were some people that we didn't really know who were just trying to find a little bit of a cheaper place to rent. And, you know, like at night we would have get togethers and we had a pool. So we had like pool parties. And then the next day, of course, we got to hang out. And so just, I recommend laying the groundwork to meeting people and making sure that you hit the ground running so you get to, you know, utilize all 7 days really well and make lasting, lifelong relationships and friendships. And, you know, I know solicitation isn't, you know, don't do any soliciting of your businesses, but I have to say just from the friendships and the relationships I've gathered at these places, like right now, my clients, except for one, most of them come from people I've met or people I've met through people I've met from Ocons. I didn't go there and like say, hey, do you want to buy my stuff? But we became friends and we chatted and then they saw what I was doing and they became clients. So, that growing, like the friendships and the relationships you build are very powerful because it's such a impactful and unique experience, I think. Because you don't get to, you know, to have those kind of intellectual discuss. Like, there are intellectual conferences, of course, but even if you don't like Ayn Rand or if you don't agree with her completely, I should say, I think the openness to ideas is unique in objectivist Ocon especially.
Yeah, it is. And it does form a basis for very meaningful relationships, you know, whatever they are, romance, friendships, business relationships, just even meaningful casual acquaintances, in a sense. So I think it's the best possible networking you'll ever do.
It's really excellent networking. And I think people, you'll be surprised with the, maybe you won't be surprised, but hopefully you won't be too surprised with the magnitude of the types of people that go. So the quality of, you know, the not just the intellectual people, but the quality of the people and the successes they have in life. And, you know, from best-selling authors, New York Times best-selling authors, of course, but to, you know, mega business people. I got to sit down and hang out with, I won't say who, but just really successful people. We had a great conversation just casually, and we talked about art and even though he was an exclusively business person. So anyway, you meet some like unique people that you don't always meet and from different areas of life that you don't always meet. So networking is a huge, huge part of it, but that's not the only part. But actually, before I move on to anything else, do you want to say anything about the different networking opportunities and the gathering opportunities people have at this summer's Ocon?
Sure. One thing that we started doing a couple of years ago is that we offer a special time from 5 to 6 almost every day for what we call the community hour. And this is where we invite people who want to present something a little maybe more casual than strict philosophy. So we have a lot of art talks there this year. We have somebody's talking about Toastmasters. I'm going to talk about some of these international programs. Alex Epstein will discuss intellectual persuasion during that hour, and then he has another talk. So that gives people a lot of ideas and, you know, give them a chance to meet the people that like the same things as they do. And then they are the more traditional. We have receptions, lunches, opening and closing reception. Neither one is a sit-down dinner anymore, which you may remember from the past, Kirk.
Yeah.
But these are more cocktail type of things so that you can mingle and you can meet as many people as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. So, like, that's changed, and there wasn't the community hour. So that's exciting. Maybe someday in the future I'll get to participate in one of those with a literature or art or poetry or something. But that's a great addition. That's a great idea to have, like, so it's basically like a little, because I think I might have even requested, but you guys were too packed in the past. And so, like, okay, to do something more casual with poetry. And so this is like an opportunity where, like, you can have like a round table or like a small group of people who are interested in one topic. And it's just maybe even a back and forth type thing is what it sounds like. Is that correct?
Even that. And if you want to do something, say, next year, just email me and I'll make sure to invite you when the time comes. So absolutely. Some of these events end up being as big as the official program events, though, because people that, you know, they crave for new things and they're not going to go to their hotel rooms or have dinner at 5, they still want to have more content.
Yeah.
So they're very popular too, and it's a good chance to present whatever you are into.
That's awesome. So, that sounds like a good idea. I'll look into that. But I think the overall feel of the conference is, that's a good addition. So if you're thinking about going, that's a good one. That definitely sounds like a great opportunity to learn new things. Now, did you have anything else to add? Because I was going to go into art and the overall idea of the conference and why people should go. And even if they're not into art, is one of the things I wanted to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Go ahead. I'll let you take the lead instead.
Okay.
I'm the organizer, and I know a little bit of everything, but I'll see what appeals to you and to your audience.
Well, so my audience would be interested in art, because this is the Troubadour, you know, it's all about poetry and literature, and I do, something called Sunday Morning Poetry every Sunday. So that's definitely part of what we do, but I think there may be people who listen to or watch this on YouTube or Facebook or on my other channel on the website that like a little bit of poetry. Maybe they listen to me occasionally. I've talk to people like this. I have a lot of friends who are, small, medium-sized business owners in San Antonio and Central Texas, for instance, who don't really read much literature, but they work really hard and they don't have the time. They read a lot of nonfiction books that are business and sales oriented. What I'm talking about. And, you know, most people like that, especially when they're in the midst of building something, aren't always thinking about, well, let me take, a lot of time, a couple hours a week or whatever, to really study Dostoevsky or, Hugo or, whoever, like Hawthorne or something, or even poetry, and reading this stuff is a lot for them. Because it does take time.
It does.
To understand it, if you're going to, so I know you guys have a lot of music in this one, which, and it's not pop music, today. This is classical, very in-depth, serious music. I don't know much about music, but from what I've read of it, seems like, although there is Tiddlywink, so that should be interesting.
And there's the American musical too.
Yeah.
It's sort of English.
Okay, that's right. Yeah. So, I forgot that I don't know much about the American Broadway musical. So that should be interesting. So why don't we start there? So, even if you're not into deep, heavy art, which you might think of with the Romantic Manifesto, like, what do you know much about what people are going to experience with this talk, the music talk, for instance, the Broadway one?
The Broadway one, this is going to be given by Thomas Schubaram, and it will be in two parts, so the total of 2 hours. He says that the Broadway musical is really a unique American music form, and he will discuss the origins. And since he plays the piano and cello himself, he's given a lot of music courses for us. So I know that he typically plays excerpts, and then he also plays something on the piano himself, and sometimes even something on the cello, even though the cello may not lend itself to an American musical or vice versa. And he then showed clips of some of the, so I think it will be a very kind of wholesome experience of what the American musical is, including its origins, both, you know, what comes to music and probably what comes to philosophy to some extent. I know that Thomas normally covers some of that too.
Yeah, so I don't know if I've taken a course from Thomas yet. Although I think I've seen some of his stuff, because I know he plays. So this is one of the things that, even if you don't know much about art or classical music, but this conference, and because I know this from previous conferences that have touched on this, it doesn't just give you these bland lectures like you're in a classroom and, you know, you have this teacher just kind of breaking down everything, you know, which is can be useful, of course, that's part of it. But the instructors and the speakers at OCON specifically are, I guess, encouraged. I don't know the background of you guys working with them, but are encouraged to really bring to life the things that they're talking about, right? So if it's, you know, if it's movies, you might watch movie clips. If it's, in this case, Broadway musical, I assume they're going to be, you know, like you said, they're going to be playing some of the music and describing it. And what that does for you is that now, you know, if you've ever said, I don't like musicals, what that maybe is because you don't understand musicals. And with a little bit of understanding, you could open up a whole entire planet of experiences, you know, of things that you might enjoy more than you would have ever suspected. So, and it only takes, it's only a couple hours of investment this would be a great opportunity to find out if you, you know, if at the end of it you say, well, it's great, but I still don't like it, that's fine, but now you know, right?
Why you don't like, yeah. I think you're right about that. And one special thing about anything that we do with music at OCONS is that since so many excerpts are typically being played from recorded sessions, there are a lot of copyright issues there. So we typically don't have them videotaped or even audiotaped, because we couldn't allow for copyright reasons for replays. So the only way really to experience those,
gotta go,
be there in person.
You gotta go, yeah. Yeah, I mean, when I was there, I think the last time I was there, I can't remember if this was planned or if it was somewhat impromptu, and it was very, like, beautiful music. It was romantic. I had my girlfriend there, and Leonard Peikoff played, who's Ayn Rand's intellectual heir, he played some jazz music with the whole, and it was it was great. Like,
that
I like jazz.
That was definitely planned.
Okay, that was planned, that's right. Yes. For some reason, it felt spontaneous. I don't
know
why.
That's good. Yeah, so it was meant to be spontaneous, but it was very carefully planned.
Okay, fair
enough. I'm glad you enjoyed that. Yeah, that was very special. Yeah. And I think that was the last time that Leonard Peikoff, presented something in person.
Live, yeah. Do you guys have surprises this time?
We have a couple of things that haven't been announced yet, but they, I have to say that neither one of them will be about art. They will be about some other things. But, you know, if you take a look at some of the stuff that we have there, which is kind of surprising, at least we haven't done it for a while, we have a classical music concert, a string ensemble will be playing, and then we have scenes of Cyrano de Bergerac, directed by Anne Ciccolella out of Orphan Shakespeare Company.
She did Anthem. I'm sorry, what? What did you say? I missed the last part.
Scenes from Cyrano de Bergerac, which is not a whole production, but scenes, but with live actors, directed by Anne Ciccolella, who runs a theater company in Austin, Texas, called Austin Shakespeare. And she will bring some actors there and stage a play on the first full day of the conference on Sunday, the 23rd of June.
That's all. She did the anthem play with Jeff Britting. The play.
She did. That was in New York and Austin and maybe some other places.
Yeah, I mean, Cyrano de Bergerac has a really special place in Ayn Rand's corpus of Romanticism, and it's really a helpful exploration of what she believes is the value and role of art in your life. And, you know, it's always meant something special to me personally. I got my degree in film production, and around that time I listened to Leonard Peikoff's 8 Great Plays, which I really recommend. And it's free, by the way. Now, I had to buy it back then, all those years ago. But I was not that long ago. It was like 2009, I think. But it was, and you have Leonard Peikoff, and it's at the Ayn Rand Institute campus online. So you can get that for free.
Also on the app. We have.
Oh, there's an app. Yeah.
On the app now.
Yeah, there's an app. So I'll post links to this stuff. There's a lot of great resources. And this is stuff that I had to buy back in the day. Now it's all free, so definitely take advantage of it. And one of the great things, one of the things that I did with ARI, OCON, and if you're in college, I did this in college. I started groups at my college to discuss these things. So, we'd meet together every week and we'd do an 8 grade play, we'd do a different play or a different, whatever course we were going through. And there's a lot of opportunities with that. And I really miss that about, and the people I met at OCON sometimes would even come if they were in the Denver area, even if they weren't students. So it's a good little community builder to go to this OCON.
Yeah, it is. Hey, Kirk, I have to tell you, do you know that there is even a book version, e-book, and an actual print-on-demand book available of that Leonard Lexicourse? It's called Discovering Great Plays. It came out about a year ago. Now I can show you the cover.
Discovering Great Plays, and I did not know about that one. I've purchased his other ones on the Introducing Objectivism. Oh, wow. As literature. That one I definitely have to get.
And the image of Cyrano.
That's Cyrano. That's the 1950 movie, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was his name? Ferrar or something.
Yeah.
So, I just remember that if you haven't experienced Cyrano, one, I recommend reading it. Even if you're not into plays, reading too much, try it. Or watch the 1950s movies is good. It's one of the most adapted stories in video medium that I've seen. They just did two more adaptations of it in the last couple of years. Rough adaptations, but they're still, inspired by it. And I remember, what I'm excited for this OCON event. I had an experience that wasn't OCON. But it was one of the more impactful things where I got to see, this is while I was in film school, they brought in a special film of the 1903 French film version, completely silent, all hand-drawn. So they actually hand-colored.
That's interesting.
They hand-colored every little scene and thing. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And the event that I went to, they had a piano player who was trained to play piano in relation to a silent movie, like they used to do in the Nickelodeon or right after the Nickelodeon.
So
that era of silent films. And it might have been the Nickelodeon era. But anyway, it was absolutely splendid because he's playing music. It's kind of impromptu based on what's happening in the scene.
Yeah.
And he kind of teaches you how that happened. And it's just like, wow.
Yeah.
It's just really cool. And the guy who played Cyrano was actually the understudy for the original player under Emmanuel Stand in the 1898 version, or whatever. So anyway, Cyrano de Bergerac has a special place in a lot of objectivist hearts because I think Ayn Rand said that it was her first, second, and third favorite play.
That's right, yeah. I asked for three favorites, and she said Cyrano, Cyrano, Cyrano.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good reason for it. It's Steve Martin did a version of it. There's, like I said, a couple versions today. I mean, it's a really critical, impactful movie or story.
Yeah.
And it's amazing if you get to go see professional actors, because I don't see a lot of plays put on by this for some reason of Cyrano.
I saw it only a few years ago here in Southern California. I think it might have been a theater called Maverick. It's either in Fullerton or Orange or somewhere there.
I'm probably stupid. I just don't look.
Very good production. You would have been here. Yeah.
I just don't look. I'm sure they do play it. I mean, it's a really popular one. But it's beautiful, and it's philosophical. There's you know, ideas. There's fighting. There's love. There's everything that you could ever want in any kind of entertainment.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a really good feature. I thought we could go through quickly some of the talk so people can get an idea. I'm actually going to pop that up on screen for people to see the whole schedule. It's a 7-day schedule. It's really 6 days.
It's actually 5 full days. You may want to count the first night, June 22nd, when we start with the opening session. So that's kind of the 6-day.
Yeah. Okay, so we're looking at the conference schedule here. So, if you're thinking about going to this thing, and I swear, ARI is not paying anything for this. I just really want to go.
I swear. I don't have a budget to pay, Kirk. Otherwise, I might be sick.
Yeah. This is just amazing experience. I've gone to, I don't know how many conferences in my life, and I love going to conferences. I actually do. You'll learn a lot. You meet cool people. But this one is really special and really, really cool. We have on Saturday, June 22nd, what do we have? 2 to 6 is opening services, correct?
Yeah, that is just for people to come up and pick up their little, we provide a nice bag and a notebook. The bag is kind of a surprise, actually. What is the image on the bag this year?
Okay, cool. So we won't go into the bag. So you're going to get...
Then we go on to the opening reception right after that.
Okay, cool. So we're not getting... we don't want to spoil too much of that then. But we'll say that I would say, this is in Cleveland, Ohio, correct?
Correct. And I have to say at this point, since I've heard so much criticism about Cleveland, it's a very clean, nice city. Anyone who might have thought of that as an old rust belt, deteriorating industrial city, it's not like that anymore. And you're thinking about something that happened that might have been the case 20 years ago, but today it's very different. And we are going to be at the Hilton, which is a high-rise that was built in 2016. So it's a very new, it's a wonderful hotel. Might be the best hotel we've ever been in.
Okay.
So
that's nice.
Don't think about anything bad about Cleveland, but come and see it yourself. I think you'll be very pleasantly surprised.
Well, can you say real quick any of the surrounding event, like things people can go to and visit? Because you're not going to be like, in the outskirts of Cleveland or out in the middle of nowhere of Ohio, you're in the dead center of the heart of what is an important part of American culture. Cleveland, Ohio has a long history, and it's you're in the center of it. It's not like, like I said, you're going to be out in the cornfields of Ohio.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the hotel is very close to Lake Erie. And one thing that's easy to visit is the Rock and Roll Hall of Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That will be...
There you go.
I remember I actually saw it from my hotel room when I went to see this hotel for the first time.
Yeah.
You can go and, enjoy a baseball game. I know that some people are already planning this for Oakhorn. There's a theater district. I don't know what they're playing at that time, but that's there. There are lots of parks. There are some museums. There's some wine tasting a little further away. There's a wonderful estate that I'm planning on visiting the day after Oakhorn has ended. I don't remember the name now, but it's about half an hour out of the city, and it used to be the gentleman who founded Goodyear, whose name was not Goodyear, but something else. Yeah. His estate, House and Garden, which I hear is really a wonderful place.
Okay.
So, it is, like Kirk said, the heart of the American industrial base. So it's definitely worth seeing. There's, Ayn Rand's husband, Frank O'Connor, was from Lorain, Ohio, which is not far from Ohio, from Cleveland either. I don't think the house where he was born stands anymore, but if you want to do some historical detective work, we actually have a lot of history on that on the Oakhorn Facebook page.
Okay. Yeah, so definitely check out Ocon. This is Ocon 2019 Facebook page.
Yeah.
And also I have to say, like, having gone to several Ocons, when we were in Vegas, like, I didn't gamble. Like, we were so busy. We did do like Circus LA and things like that, but a couple times, but for the most part, we were so busy hanging out and, you know, kind of just going to a bar and just, you know, enjoying each other's company. We went to like a nightclub and just having fun or whatever. And like that, you know, this is why I really encourage, you know, if this is your first Ocon, get on the Ocon 2019 page, introduce yourself, tell people who you are, like, you know, meet people. If it were me, I would do a video of myself and introduce myself and say, hey, I'm coming down there, I want to meet people, and, you know, try to use it as an opportunity to interact. So like I said, even at the Vegas's, which is Vegas, I still spent the vast majority of the time just spending time hanging out, you know, talking to people and, you know, like I said, going and having fun in like a bar or something simple. Something you could do anywhere.
Yeah, that's a good recommendation. I agree. And that's what most people seem to be doing, because we see them congregating out in the hallways and, you know, spending long nights in the bar and just meeting new and old friends. And it's wonderful.
Well, there's like, sometimes people get like a really big, like almost a penthouse type thing, and they'll play music and,
yeah,
and stuff like that. And there's, you know, like little parties that they have. So there's just always something. They could have Ocon in the middle of nowhere, and it would still be a blast.
Yeah.
It'd still have a fun place. Cleveland, Ohio, I've never been. It may not be Vegas, but it's still a downtown, vibrant place. But the most important thing is you're going to have things to do anyway. Getting back to I recommend getting there, you know, that day and exploring Cleveland, you know, check in to your hotel and just wander around the hotel, because you'll probably run into Ocon people. And, you know, introduce yourself on that first day.
Absolutely. If you're going to show the calendar, I want to mention something. I want people...
It's up right now, actually.
Ocon. I love meeting everyone there, and it's a wonderful experience being there. But we are also going to live stream the general sessions.
Okay.
When we post that up, that's anything that starts at 10 a.m. So from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. every day, there will be something that you can watch our live stream, and I will be announcing that a couple of weeks from now. But that's what you can expect to be able to see. There will be a fee to see that, or if you don't want to pay anything, you can wait maybe 6 months to a year, and we'll probably make all of those sessions available for free on our university app and on the Ayn Rand campus, or YouTube. We have several channels through which we put out material.
Are you allowed to say how much it would cost to do that, to do the streaming?
I am allowed, but I haven't decided it yet. So if I keep the price the same as last year, I think it was $195 for an adult pass to see them all. Okay. And then you can watch as many times as you want within about a month and a half, which I have it open. And then if you're a student, I think the price was maybe $90 or $95, and I'll keep it roughly the same, if not exactly the same.
Okay, sounds good. So that's also one option, but you should definitely try to go, too. It would be even better if you could.
Yeah.
But there are reasons why you can't go, I understand. Obviously.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, so then on the first day, or the first official full day, there's... it starts off with Harry Benswinger's logic course. It's not always just about art. This is an example of a whole course on logic and thinking, and which by the way is important in art, and it's important in life, right? Like, if you're a business person and you've ever been talking to people and they just don't make sense of anything, and you sometimes have trouble communicating, a logic course can really help in that realm. So this, you know, I really recommend Harry Benswinger.
Harry's going to be on every single morning at that same time at 8:40.
And he's going to be teaching you how to think better, essentially.
Yeah. And if that's something that appeals to you, we have his previous, I think, four parts of the same course are available on Ayn Rand campus.
Okay.
So this is continuation. It's all more or less based on his book, How We Know.
Yeah. Okay, which is a good one to have for sure.
Yeah.
And it's logic never seems like a fun course, but objectivism always takes a, like the intellectuals within objectivism always take a very, or at least a slightly or some kind of a different perspective on these things, which is why I find them interesting. You know, take course outside of objectivism, to, you know, in academia or wherever online, great courses, and then take a course from an intellectual. And they always have different perspectives, and it's really interesting to kind of see.
And it always relates to something in reality, something that you apply to your own life. You see the meaning of it. So it's never just, you know, abstract, weird philosophy that has nothing to do with nothing. That's not my rant.
Which is funny, like, about art and what I think is so important about her view of art. And it you know, it's something I've studied a lot of hers. Probably the book I've read the most is The Romantic Manifesto. I read it all the time. I haven't read it as much lately, although I am rereading it again. And it's so marked up more than any of her other nonfiction work. Like, this is my Bible, essentially. And it's really... But it's really fascinating, like, having conversations with people who haven't read it or who haven't been immersed in Ayn Rand's ideology much or at all, and talking to them about art. And it's, you know, like, I don't know if you saw Game of Thrones.
No, I'm not one for very violent.
Okay, fair enough. It's okay. But I won't say anything about it, but I had, you know, people are very passionate about it. And, you know,
And
myself included. Like, I think it was really well done. But I had a conversation with somebody who's in media, and he's, you know, he's a professional. He's very good. I like him. But the way he talked about it is exactly what you were just saying about, there was always missing in his conversation about art the element of real life and how an artist observes real life and how they observe real life. And then how they project that real life in art, right? Which is what, in my view, good art should be judged by, is how a good artist integrates it and stylizes something to project an abstract theme that's, you know, concretized, because this kind of helps you in living your actual life. Because when you see characters like this, you can then, you know, better understand where they're coming from, and people aren't so baffling. Like, I don't know a lot, like, people do baffle me in certain senses, but I always know from reading literature and my guidance from Ayn Rand, you know, I've read people who in literature, you know, like Gone with the Wind or something, where there seems like, or Quo Vadis was one I read not so long ago, where it's like, this character seems really baffling, but there's actually something important integrating all of their actions. And it's the same thing with people in real life, and sometimes it's hard or impossible to find it in real life. But by reading art, by seeing it in paintings, by seeing it in good films and in good plays, it helps you to isolate that in real life and kind of get an idea of how people are acting, which is, again, if you haven't had a good introduction to art, this is completely different than anything you've ever experienced, if you've experienced anything in art, because it's based on and designed to help you navigate life.
Yeah, well put, Kirk.
Thank you. So Aaron Smith is the next one on June 23rd. June 23rd, which is Sunday.
Yeah. And he's going to be... a whole series running throughout the 5 days. There are three different intellectuals who are discussing aspects of Ayn Rand's philosophy.
Yeah, and Aaron Smith, I've seen some of his stuff. I really like him. He's discussing, like, duty as anti-morality. So again, if you're not into art, 100%, there are other things. He also is doing discussing objectivism from metaphysical facts to moral guidance. Now, that should be interesting, you know, for anybody who's interested in philosophy, but even if you're not, like, what a metaphysical fact is something worth considering. And then Keith Lockett, I had him come to my campus when I was on in college. Last year, he did an amazing talk on black holes, and that one, I just have to pitch this to people. It's online. I think it's on YouTube for free, right?
That's on YouTube, yes.
Yeah, and it's so amazing because I'm not a science person. Like, I don't remember anything science. I'm like a complete moron. But he breaks it down so that any lay person can understand what he's talking about with gravitational fields. And what makes it exciting and exhilarating is, like, he opens and he talks about this, what seems like a minor discovery, and I won't give it away, it's a minor thing that was learned recently through this decade-long scientific, you know, examination or building, study, I guess. And it actually has huge ramifications on all of our lives and in the future in ways that we don't often think about. So I really recommend Keith Lockridge. This year, he's talking about climate, energy, and environmentalist movement. It's a big one, of course.
Yeah. But not from the perspective where you normally read about it in papers or other video.
Yeah, it's definitely controversial. You know, so objectivists are not afraid of being controversial.
But, no.
But it gives you different perspectives on it. And we do love the environment, believe it or not. Like, it's not about that. It's not
absolutely like, yeah.
So I'm just kind of listing off some of the ones that they all look really cool. I don't want to read all of them, but I'm really excited about the one from Ben Bayer. He taught at the college that I used to work with, that I used to go to, and so I got to know him a little bit. And I just remember, you know, he's a great lecturer. And very interesting intellectually. He studies epistemology, the theory of knowledge. And his he always has a really good way of breaking down in concrete ways how to think about an issue. And in this one, he's going to be talking about Romanticism and Atlas Shrugged. So if you've read Atlas Shrugged, you probably know the politics angle of it. Right? You probably know a lot about the economics, maybe a little bit of the morality, but he's going to talk about the art and why it's an important work of romantic art. So that is, I'm really excited about that one. I don't know if you have. Were there any ones that you stood out to you? We talked about the Broadway musical. Obviously there's so many good ones. What else? So Yaron Brook is going to do a talk on Monday at 10 a.m. So again, people, they can't see it actually. I forgot to pop it up again. So now you could see the menu again. But I had the chance when Yaron Brook was living in Southern California, I actually had the chance to visit his house. And I don't know if you, have you been there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I've never been to a house that had more art than a museum has. Like, he has art from floor to ceiling.
He has a lot of very nice pieces, yeah.
Yeah, it's not like normal. It's like art that you'd find in a good museum. And he's going to give a talk about how to fill your life with art. And that one looks really cool, too.
And you know, Kirk, that he's actually trying to do something that you aspire to. When he travels a lot. He's just, he left for Asia today. He will do talks in 5 Asian countries starting this Friday. So he always visits some of the grand art museums and often takes a local objectivist guide. So he's seen a lot of the best museums in the world. And that's one of the things that he's going to discuss, how to seek great art while you're traveling. And he used to be running an art business way back when, maybe 20, 30 years ago. So he will discuss that too and what that meant to him and what he discovered while doing that. So I think it will be a very personal talk in a meaningful way in things that people can apply to their own lives and get good tips on how to do this and that.
And I know the Quint Corder Gallery, the Corder Gallery, they're also doing a pop-up lecture and a pop-up exhibit, which we won't talk too much about, but they're an art gallery in Napa Valley, so not far from where I am. I will go see them very soon. I hope to be able to see them before OCON. They have beautiful art. Like, the art that I want to put in my house is their art, the art that they show. Like, they have it. But what Yaron and what the Corders are going to be showing and teaching is something that's really complicated, more complicated than we sometimes think about, and it's how to choose art for yourself. You're right, not art that, you know, makes you look cool in front of other people's eyes when they come visit, but art that really says something to you and fills your life with nourishment and enjoyment and pleasure and contemplation, things like that.
Yeah, and in the case of Quent Cordier Fine Art, they will actually have like a pop-up gallery there. They have one room and they will fill it up with art. I saw that Linda Cordier just posted on the Ocon group the other day that they're bringing 100 pieces, whoa, which sounds like a huge amount to me for the room, because it's not a huge, huge room.
Yeah.
But they are very excited about coming. And Linda will give a talk about how to care for your own art that you have bought, you know. That will be interesting. Very hands-on, literally hands-on experience, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, like, I think most people I know, when they buy something, it's something that, like, maybe it's a movie poster or, you know, which is good. It's something personal to you. But there is something, when you start learning about painting, which does take a little bit of knowledge to kind of gain an understanding of it, which you'll learn a bit through Ayn Rand. Like, she has a really good explanation of how it helps to train your consciousness to see the world, and so it's very, you know, helpful to read her book too before you go to this conference. But, and you'll probably learn at this conference as well, but once you start to see that, you really, like, when you experience art, like, anybody's gone to a gallery with me, you know, I think there's a way where you are able to hone your words and consciousness by looking at a great piece of art, asking certain questions, and bringing out what the author wanted to mean from it, and then applying that to your life is very powerful. And then when you find something that really speaks to you in some way, for whatever reason, that, you know, like, it's just a very special, I mean, it's like falling in love in real life with a person. Once you have even a little, you don't need to be an expert, just have a rudimentary understanding of how to do it, which I think Ocon can give to you. So I know you have to go in a few minutes. Do you have any other ones you want to talk about with the, I could pop up the calendar one last time.
You know, one speaker that I wanted to mention is Lisa Van Dam. Lisa will do two talks. One of them is about poetry. She will speak about John Keats, his life and his poetry. And that is actually a talk that I have heard. I went to her rehearsal talk a couple of weeks ago. So I know it's a very emotionally moving talk. And I recommend that. She will also give a general session, which is Literature and the Quest for Meaning. I'm not quite sure I'm saying the title right, but that will be on Wednesday the 26th.
Yeah, 10 a.m. Wednesday the 26th. It's Literature and the Quest for Meaning. I wonder if she's going to talk about Jordan Peterson, because he talks about his literature and meaning and all that stuff. So I wonder, that'll be interesting.
I think Lisa will be talking about literature and not Jordan Peterson, but we'll hear.
maybe she'll mention it. I'm just curious because he was there last year. He talks about meaning a lot as well. I'm sorry, say that again?
Yeah, Jordan Peterson was at Ocon last year. And we hope to have another surprise guest this year. Not him, but somebody else.
Cool. So she's doing both of her sessions, it looks like, on Wednesday the 26th.
Yeah.
So Keats, Life and Poetry. And for those who are watching this podcast or listening to it, you probably know that I've done a lot of poetry from Keats in the past. I've done all of his odes and some of his other ones. And so, you know, I'm a big fan of Keats. I'm a big fan of all the English Romantics. And so that's going to be a great talk. Peacock's, his lecture, one-time lectures, Poems I Love and Why, which is a one-hour lecture, 1 hour and a half. That's what sparked my love for poetry. And then Lisa Van Dam's lectures on poetry that she's done at Ocon's in the past, is what really gave me more of a love and more of an understanding of it. And I got to actually see her in action in California when she was teaching her 8th grade class Tennyson's Rizpah, which made me fall in love with that, and then really taught me a little bit more about how to jump into poetry as a lay person. Like, that's, you're just a, you don't have to take 20 years of college to get it.
No, that's very much what she's doing in this Keats talk. She's unpacking it for somebody who is not used to reading poetry, not used to, you know, what English language was like when Keats wrote, which is very different from the straightforward American English today. So it will make it a lot easier for anyone to jump in.
I agree. I like it. I'm looking forward to it. Okay, and then of course there's the last things we'll say is there's the trivia. There's, and then of course, which I've I'm sorry, what?
The talent show.
Yeah, I was gonna say, and then the talent show, which I enjoy seeing, but I've never participated because I have no talents, so I can't do anything up there. I don't know. So, but it's cool to see. It's fun. You know, it's very lively. Like, you can hear it, you know, rocking the house down. And are you guys doing karaoke this year?
No, we're not. Okay. We just don't have enough room for karaoke, you know. Mostly since we started doing talent show, and it's almost more fun to see different people perform.
Yeah, perform. I mean, that's fun too, because people get to.
Professional band.
Yeah, exactly. And it also gives you, like, more things to talk to other people about.
Yeah.
It's like, here's my talent. Go
another social event where you can bond with people. And, you know, that's what we are. Ultimately, we're trying to build a community of more and more people interested in Ayn Rand and different aspects of her philosophy. And arts is the focus this year. But we just like to offer opportunities for everyone to learn and enjoy themselves. Because you need to do both in your life. And you definitely need to enjoy art to make your life more meaningful.
So before we go, I wanted to read one sentence, if that's okay with you, that this is the inspiration for me from the Romantic Manifesto for a lot of what I do, especially with Troubadour. Did you have any last thoughts before we sign off, and or before I read this and we sign off?
I guess I'll just say, if you come to Oakhorn as a result of Kirk's efforts, come and say hello to me and let me know that. That would be really cool too.
Press it on now, folks. Go make me look good.
Yeah,
that's good. Go say hi, you know, intermingle and so on. But here's the talk, or the little thing that's in What is Romanticism? And she says, there's a lot she says about Romanticism, but she says, if the spiritual ancestor or symbol of the Romanticist is the medieval troubadour who roamed the countryside, inspiring men with visions of life's potential beyond the dreary boundaries of their daily toil. Then she goes on to say, then naturalism is X. I'm not going to say that. It doesn't matter right now. But that's how I always envisioned the troubadour. It's not a literal, you know, singing minstrel songs necessarily, and, you know, medieval songs, but as a symbol of the romanticist, you know, who roams the countryside, inspiring men with visions of life's potential beyond the dreary boundaries of your daily toil.
That's what you are doing.
I'm trying. That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah. That's the spirit, and that's definitely what Ocon 2009 will do. 2019. The heck, what year am I in? Definitely. Okay, so Anu, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Yeah. So we'll get it out there, and you guys are gonna rock 2019.
Thank you. We'll do our best.